From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Patricio Roballo, sitting in for Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's Friday, and Dan Hoots is here with updates from Sullivan County government, including the latest on the proposed 20-bed homeless shelter in Monticello. Our own Angela Page is here to share more about the year's Parkinson's Unity Walk in Central Park and the local support group for affected Parkinson's. A preview of the latest episode of Curtain Call with Tom Candela and our new theater podcast. Plus, a soulful conversation about global dance fusion. Coming up, we'll talk about harnessing your inner godness, why digestion matters in dance, and how movement can transform more than just your body. That's all coming up today on Radio Chatskill, but first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President Trump is on his way to Rome to attend the funeral of Pope Francis. He'll attend along with scores of other world leaders. It's possible Trump could meet with a few of them, such as Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Trump has been pushing Ukraine and Russia to accept a U.S.-backed peace deal to end Russia's war in Ukraine. He wants Ukraine to give up territory to Russia, a position the Kremlin has demanded. Trump says he has sent his envoy, Steve Witkoff, to Moscow.
We're meeting with Putin right now as we speak, and we have a lot of things going on, and I think in the end we're going to end up with a lot of good deals, including tariff deals and trade deals. We're going to make our country rich, but we're going to try and get out of war so that we can save 5,000 people a week, and that's what my aim is. I want to save 5,000 young men.
Trump also appears to be engaged in a kind of back and forth with Chinese officials over trade. He's been insisting the U.S. had contact with China every day about tariffs. Yesterday, China said flatly that any report of trade talks was false. Trump continues to insist he is talking to Beijing. China snapped back today that's not true and that the U.S. should stop creating confusion. Stocks opened mixed this morning as Americans voiced caution about rising prices tied to the president's trade war. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell about 180 points in early trading.
A new poll by the Associated Press finds most Americans think prices will rise as a result of the president's new import taxes, with about half of those surveyed expecting prices to go up a lot. Many of those polled say they're concerned the U.S. is heading towards a recession. Google has suffered a number of legal setbacks in recent weeks, but that's not hurting the company's bottom line. Google's parent company reported a 50% jump in profits during the first quarter. That's giving a boost to the search engine giant's stock. Asian stocks were mixed overnight. Tokyo's Nikkei average jumped nearly 2%. Stocks were also up in Seoul and Hong Kong, but slightly lower in Shanghai. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
The Trump administration says it did not violate a judge's order when it deported migrants to a country other than their own. NPR's Joel Rose reports it's the latest immigration case where the administration has edged toward open defiance of federal courts.
A federal judge in Boston blocked the Trump administration last month from rapidly deporting immigrants to countries other than their own without first giving them a chance to object if they fear they'll face torture or death there. In a court filing, a lawyer for the Department of Homeland Security now says four people who had been previously convicted of crimes were deported to El Salvador on March 31st, 3 days after the judge issued his temporary restraining order. But DHS argues that their deportations did not violate the judge's order because they were carried out by the Defense Department, which is, quote, not a defendant in the case.
NPR's Joel Rose reporting. It's NPR. The UN is urging Pakistan and India against a potential military confrontation. This follows a mass shooting this week by gunmen in India-controlled Kashmir province. At least 26 Indian citizens were killed, apparently targeted because they were Hindu. India blames Pakistan, which has denied any link to the attack. A dozen states, led by Oregon, are suing the Trump administration over his sweeping tariffs. As Oregon Public Broadcasting's Conrad Wilson reports, the lawsuit argues the president's actions could backfire, resulting in job losses.
Earlier this month, President Trump declared a national emergency over the nation's trade deficit. Most of his steep new tariffs are on hold, except against China, but some U.S. states are especially vulnerable to their potential effects. Oregon's economy depends heavily on trade. State Attorney General Dan Rayfield says the president doesn't have the legal authority to impose tariffs in the way that he's done.
It's already begun increasing prices on things we regularly buy, from groceries to utility costs. and it's forced us into trade wars. And ultimately, it is going to cost our state jobs and our country jobs.
Trump argues the tariffs are necessary to correct trade imbalances and boost manufacturing jobs in the U.S. For NPR News, I'm Conrad Wilson in Portland.
Meanwhile, California filed its own lawsuit over the tariffs last week. This comes as California Governor Gavin Newsom says that his state has now become the world's fourth largest economy. The Democratic governor says California overtook Japan's economy to reach this ranking. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Lilly Endowment, a private foundation supporting NPR's coverage of religion and spirituality, and Jarl and Pamela Mohn, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Patricio Robayo, sitting in for Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining me. Well, Tim may be away for today, but Dan Hoos is still here, and he's like he is every Friday with updates from the Sullivan County government. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. How are you, Patricio?
Oh, let me bring up your microphone. Look at there.
Oh.
Now the people can hear you.
Good morning, Patricio.
Good morning.
How are you?
Doing fantastic. Doing fantastic. So I hear and I saw that the legislature was very busy yesterday.
Goodness, yes, it was.
We have some big news to talk about. Let's talk about this proposed 20-bed homeless shelter in Monticello, which is moving forward. I heard a lot of talk about this in some of the town board meetings. What can you tell us?
Yeah. Well, it was a matter of quite a bit of talk yesterday because there was a public hearing about it. The public hearing was required by law because the county is considering a long-term lease, 25-year lease, up to 25-year lease, with a homeless shelter operator out of Middletown called Honor. And we want to create a 20-bed temporary transition housing. It's not a place where people are going to live long, long-term, but create that over at the end of a dead-end street called Pitaluga Road outside of Monticello. It's actually sort of behind our sheriff's office and jail back in the woods. And it would have 20 beds for single people. I don't believe it would be for families. It would be temporary, trying to get them into more permanent housing, but a step towards addressing the homeless problem without having to resort to using local hotels and motels. So it's I think everybody agrees that it's a worthy effort. The question is, of course, is always about the location. And the public hearing that was required before they move forward on this potential lease and construction of this facility, because it doesn't exist yet, brought out neighbors who live in a I believe it's a housing development, a seasonal housing development next door, who didn't want this next door to them. They were concerned about a potential criminal element and that there's children there. So then there were others who came up and said we shouldn't be treating homeless folks as criminals unless there's actual criminal activity and it's already next to the jail, which houses criminals. There was questions about the security and how secure it would be. This would be a 24-hour monitored facility. Honor, their executive director, was there and didn't indicate initially that there would be on-site security as much as just professionals there helping them, but if necessary, there could be. Legislators, the majority of legislators in the end, decided to move forward with going with the lease on this facility if and when it actually gets built, which we're moving towards as well. But I think there will be more opportunities for public comment coming up. It's not all wrapped up in a done deal yet.
Right. When is sort of the timeline on the actual facility to be built?
Well, I think there's a hope that construction could start this year.
Oh, wow.
But that depends on a number of pieces falling into place. So I would be surprised if it didn't start by next year. There is a real need for a homeless shelter in Sullivan County. We have had as much as over 300 people homeless at any given time. So, of course, people are like, well, a 20-bed facility, what's that going to do? Well, it's a start. We can't necessarily operate a 300-bed facility. It's the costs are extensive.
Right.
But the hope is that this would be within walking distance of downtown Monticello. And to the government center, to services that people might need as well. Plus, like I said, it would be, have 24-hour staffing by honor.
Will be co-ed? I'm assuming it would be? Or?
I believe so. I've heard different reports on that, so I'm not sure. I know there'll be men. I'm pretty sure there'll be women, too. But I don't believe there will be families there.
Right.
We want them in their own place, not necessarily in co-ed habitation. With single people.
Right. And so. You mentioned about the need. Right now, currently, I believe it's homeless shelters right now are the hotels that are in Monson. And also, they also get placed in Orange County where there is shelters.
Right, right. Neither of which is ideal.
Right.
So, of course, we're talking about ideal in a situation that's not ideal for anyone, including those who are homeless. Because contrary to popular opinion, the majority of folks that we deal with who are Sullivan County people, not people coming in here from outside and just panhandling kind of thing, are people who are not homeless by choice. They're homeless by circumstance, homeless by perhaps some mental and emotional issues that they're dealing with, not at any kind of criminal level, just dealing with situations that they're very hard. Kathy Kreider, who is the head of Sullivan County Federation for the Homeless, came and spoke at the public hearing and said, we're all a flat tire away from being homeless. And that's obviously a little bit hyperbole, but you get what she means.
Yeah.
Is it could be a real bad issue that suddenly throws us all into a situation. And if we don't have family and friends close by to help us out, it may mean that we're homeless and somebody needs to be there to help stand in that gap.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, she's definitely right there.
Oh, yes.
Let's move on to we have a new human rights commissioner, executive director. This is a long time coming. The commission was disbanded, I guess, a couple of years ago. Is that the right word to say?
Not really disbanded. It sort of went defunct in terms of we didn't have an executive director. We didn't have a commission that was meeting actively. We were still taking complaints and taking a look at whether those complaints could be resolved through mediation or needed to be bounced up to the state for full investigation. That was through our Human Resources Commissioner, Julie Deesher. It was under her. Now the human rights has been moved under the county manager's office. So our new Human Rights Executive Director, Ramon Wilson, will be reporting directly to Josh and to the legislature. There's also a commission that the legislature just approved yesterday, includes, I've got the names here right in front of me, the following folks, and we're going to have a press release out explaining a little bit of the bio of each of these people, but Joel Santiago, Ari Pontier, Amanda Ward, Charlie Wade, Margaret Gans, Bill Liblick, Ricardo Nieves, Miranda Behan, and Alex Portugal. All local folks, they will be charged not with investigating any kind of situation. We don't have that authority at the county level. Only the state could investigate human rights violations. However, we could take the complaints and forward them on to them. What the commission, however, really will be working on is outreach and education, letting people know that there are resources, there are options, there are ways to address grievances that you may have with whatever situation that you're dealing with. And not just necessarily individuals, but also businesses. Maybe how do they handle a particular human rights issue? We'll be here to help them talk about that. And that's the idea, is to have local folks rather than having you call some disembodied voice up in Albany. These will be people that we hope you'll actually get to know. And the Ramon is also a director of our consumer affairs, which we haven't had that in a long, long time. Okay. In fact, we used to do that through Cornell. So he'll be there to listen to people who are not necessarily talking about human rights issues, but maybe issues that they've had with local businesses or businesses have had with local folks. We want this to be a two-way street, not just something where people think we're standing over them with the hammer ready to fall. We want dialogue. We want to work things out. Ramona said, my goal is to find that there's no need for an investigation. We've just been able to do mediation. We've been able to work things out between the aggrieved parties.
Right, right. Yeah, I was going to see if you could talk about the sort of the importance of having an executive director, because if they can't fully investigate a particular claim, you know, one will wonder, like, so what's the point of having a director? But you say it's sort of more of could be a mediation before it even gets to the point of reporting to the state.
And could be a conduit for the investigation to the state, could take the information and relay that to the state. Again, you want to deal with somebody local in these kinds of very personal, very difficult, very challenging situations. But the whole idea, too, is to improve the climate of human rights, consumer rights in Sullivan County in a way that's positive for everybody so that people feel like the county has their back and we are here to talk, to support, to work through situations, many of which may never need that big heavy-duty hammer that I was talking about earlier, but just need some dialogue. And Ramon is our first full-time human rights executive director, which prior executive directors had said was sorely needed. This legislature said, okay, we're going to put money in the budget for that. So he is now there every day, Monday through Friday. He welcomes phone calls. It's 807-0189. That's 845-807-0189. Or you can catch him at ramon.wilson@sullivanny.gov. He has an open door policy too. His office is on the second floor of the government center in Monticello. I would say anytime between 8:30 and 4:30, you should be able to find him there. He is going to be going on basically a listening tour of Sullivan County, too, talking to individuals, to schools, to police departments, to businesses, to churches, to find out what are the concerns, what are the needs, because he's not from here. And while some people are like, well, then how does he know? Well, he's going to learn. He learned yesterday at legislature when he saw there was quite a bit of contentiousness about who was going to be on the commission. He got to see that up close. But I think it's actually an asset for him that he's coming in with no real preconceived notions other than he wants to help people. He's got this experience in fighting for human rights and protecting people's access to services that they deserve. And he just wants to continue that here. Plus, he happens to be an incredibly talented musician who has been the studio and touring pianist for people like Mary J. Blige, Tony Braxton, Mariah Carey. So this guy has a fascinating background and just is very humble and approachable. And I hope people really take advantage of that open door policy. He is honest about that. He wants to hear what you have to say.
Well, listeners can learn more about him. On Monday, he'll be, on the local edition. I also learn more about him. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Patricio Robayo. We're here with Dan Hoos, Communications Director for Sullivan County. Now, staying on the topic of the Human Rights Commission, there is a public hearing set for June 19th, 10:20 a.m., to modify a local law to allow legislators to serve on the Human Rights Commission. And there was some pushback on that because the legislator Amanda Ward is on the Human Rights Commission or wants to be on the Human Rights Commission.
Was actually appointed to it yesterday.
Okay, was official.
It was made official yesterday. Yeah, legislators it got contentious because Amanda felt that it was a personal attack on her. Other legislators like Nadia Reich and Kat Scott said that it wasn't personal. Their concern is not necessarily about Amanda, but down the road, if somebody who had ill intent, whose legislator was serving on the commission and has the already great power as a legislator and now also is on the commission, would that have a deleterious effect on the commission or on the mission of the commission? So there was quite spirited debate between legislators, also some members of the public about this. In the end, legislators decided, no, we're going to have Amanda on there, but also we want to modify the legal language surrounding the Human Rights Commission to be more like some of the other non-legislative boards and commissions that legislators serve on. They serve on, I think, like the Farm and Ag Land Protection Board and things, but that's actually written into there that a legislator should be serving or can serve on there. With the Human Rights Commission, there's no language in any direction as to whether a legislator can or should serve on the Human Rights Commission. So legislators are interested in clearing that up. And I would imagine maybe setting some guardrails around that. So that's what this public hearing will be on June 19th at 10:20 a.m., just before a full board meeting, that month's full board meeting at the legislative hearing room, to amend the law that talks about members on the Human Rights Commission. But at the moment, Amanda is a seated, properly seated, duly appointed member of the Human Rights Commission, and I know she looks forward to serving. This has been really her idea to help get this Human Rights Commission resurrected on a fast track.
Right, and let's remind folks that the commission are, like I said, don't have like power to investigate, but they're more for engaging the community.
Yeah, outreach and education, outreach, right. Which was one of the things that she was saying is I can't, there's no power I can exercise on there. And I'm just wanting to make sure that people feel heard. And everyone considered that laudable on the legislature. And so hopefully they're going to work something out. But if you want to watch the discussion and debate, it was very interesting and compelling to watch. It is available on video at sullivanny.gov.
Right, definitely. Well, let's move on here. The county, the legislators passed a law yesterday adding cannabis to the existing social host law. First of all, what is the social host law and what does cannabis have to do with it?
Yeah, this is something that was enacted several years ago regarding alcohol and drugs at parties where teenagers might be. Maybe it was even a party for the teenagers, but the adults in the household were not monitoring that they were actually consuming substances that might be legal for adults but would not be legal for people under 18. And basically what the state and the county laws say are, you know, if you're over 18, you're considered an adult and you can be held responsible if somebody under that age in your presence at one of these parties is consuming something that they shouldn't be consuming, like alcohol or you know, some sort of prescription drug or something. And so cannabis has now been added to that because, of course, it's legal recreationally and medicinally, of course, in Sullivan County and New York State. But it's not legal for underage unless I suppose there's probably a medicinal thing if a child had a prescription for it. I've not heard of that, but that's not what this social host law is addressing. And if that's found out, if it's reported, including if it's not your child, but it's in your house, on your property, or in your presence, you can be held legally liable for that and could be charged with a misdemeanor.
Wow. Well, that's, except, I guess, you know, refining the laws now because of cannabis being recreational, legally recreational here in Sullivan County and in New York State.
It's really just requiring adults to be responsible around young people. And it passed unanimously, and these kinds of things, they have to be reported. It's not like, you know, we're going to be setting up cameras in everybody's home, a Big Brother kind of thing. But listen, if you have a teenager in your house and they're not your teen and they go home and their parents find them stoned or drunk or whatever, they can report that to the police, and the consequences will be on you.
Well, let's move on to a little more lighter news. Sullivan County is getting a basketball team. The Hudson Valley Rivermen basketball team is going to come. It's going to be playing at SUNY Sullivan, because I heard they were going to use the Fallsburg High School gymnasium for either the practices or.
I thought the Fallsburg part was, maybe for either practices or not auditions. I'm making it sound
recruitment
like it's
performed. Or,
recruitment,
or,
that kind of thing.
Like that,
But the resolution here that the legislature passed that I have is it's the Hudson Valley Rivermen. It's an ABA team, American Basketball Association team. They'll be utilizing SUNY Sullivan's facilities during their upcoming season. So they're going to be actually, I believe, playing in the field house. And there is a rental cost. There's a security cost. There's a buildings and grounds cost. There's a housekeeping cost. And the county was reached out to and say, listen, this is a great thing to start. Would you be willing to help subsidize a little bit of this as they get going? And I think it's not something that anyone's necessarily looking at beyond this year, but the legislature did agree to it to say, yes, we want to see this at an amount not to exceed $15,000. But that was approved yesterday by legislators, just as a way to say, hey, we support this. We like this idea of having a basketball team that is indigenous to Sullivan County.
Yeah, I look forward to maybe catching one of the
games
there. Yeah,
you might be.
Yeah. So the legislature also authorized the creation of the Resorts Facilities Local Development Corporation. What exactly is that, and how does it sort of work into the whole scheme of things with Sullivan County Visitors Association and other, you know, business promoting organizations?
What this is, my understanding is that the IDA and the county were approached by Resorts World Catskills that's looking to refinance millions of dollars of its debt. And while Resorts World Catskills could do that on their own, there's actually a cheaper rate that can be gathered if you do it in sort of like a public-private partnership where you do it through a nonprofit local development corporation. So the legislature was approached and agreed yesterday to create the Sullivan County Resort Facilities Local Development Corporation, which can issue tax-exempt and taxable bonds and can do it for other organizations that would fall under the authorizing legislation, which you can find at sullivanny.gov. At this point, my understanding is the only one involved is Resort World Catskills, but I'm sure if other resort properties were interested in that, we'd be very interested. Well, the IDA, which is basically the IDA board, is the LDC board, would be interested in talking to them about it as well. But this is to make sure that Resorts World Catskills continues to be a vibrant and successful part of Sullivan County.
Right, right. So possible, like say, if the Cartwright came to the legislature, they could be part of this entity if they had an issue and they wanted to sort of.
And they wanted to say, listen, we've got a lot of debt. We'd like to refinance. Let's work together about this. It's their debt. It's what they need to take care of. We don't intend taxpayers to be paying for them. It's just a way to that the state allows to make things happen a little less expensively.
Right. And Dan, we're running out of time here, but quickly, it seems like we just got over an election, but we have election news for coming up. We have primaries coming up in June. I know that. And yep, general elections, obviously, in November. What can you tell us about early voting dates and candidates? And
they're all up on the website. The Board of Elections has been very busy, very proactive. They have a report going into legislature next week, actually, which I got to see ahead of time. Approximately 270 petitions were filed at the Board of Elections between March 30th and April 3rd. Over 500 candidates were designated this year, and the list of petitions and candidates can be found on the website at sullivanny.gov/department/elections. You can also see the early voting dates. We also have the regular voting dates, times, locations. It's already all up there, and there's also, of course, other information that might be important. For example, June 14th is the last day for the Board of Elections to receive a voter registration by mail or in person. So it's these kinds of things. You have questions about how, where, when, and to vote. We've got answers.
That's awesome. Because, and of course, on Radio Catskill, we definitely have interviews with some of the candidates running for primary and also, of course, for the general election. Again, thank you so much. We'll talk to Dan, who's Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. Thank you so much for joining us again here on Local Edition on Radio Catskill.
On Radio Catskill. Take care.
You got it.
On This Old House Radio Hour, Patrick Hutchinson left his desk job to build an off-the-grid cabin in the Pacific Northwest.
The cabin was built by people on a weekend in the mountains with just the wood that they found on the drive-up.
Plus, actor Alessandro Nivola opens the doors to his 1840s Brooklyn row house. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour. Join us for This Old House Radio Hour from APM, American Public Media.
Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
In the middle school cafeteria, Tai Toshiro always sat with his equally nerdy buddies.
The socially awkward kids who were the furthest thing from cool.
And he often wondered,
why am I so socially awkward and what am I going to do about that?
Now Tai is a psychologist and expert on awkwardness, and he has some answers. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Friday afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill.
Recently, we've been hearing songs about the animals that are native to Britain and Ireland, all the way a lot of monkeys on Radio Catskill with me, Graham Rice. But next time, our focus will be on Selkies, mythical Scottish creatures that live as seals in the sea but shed their skin to become human on land. So, that's songs about Selkies on Sunday afternoon at 3.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Patricio Robayo. Angela Page is host of Folk Plus here on Radio Catskill and is stepping up for a powerful cause tomorrow as she joins hundreds of advocates at the Parkinson's Unity Walk in New York City's Central Park. Hosted by Michael J. Fox Foundation, the annual event unites Parkinson's community for a 1.2-mile walk, raising awareness and support against the fight for the disease. And Angie joins us now with more about the Unity Walk and local Parkinson's support group at Sullivan CCE. Angie, good morning.
Good morning, Patricio.
Now, for those who may not be familiar, can you sort of tell us a bit about what the Parkinson's Unity Walk is and what it means to you personally?
Well, all over the country, people are doing Parkinson's walks. Usually I attend one in Milford. It's probably still going on tomorrow. But this year, I'm going to New York City because some of our family is coming up from North Carolina and Virginia, and they thought they wanted to be part of it. My husband has Parkinson's currently. My brother did. My grandfather did. My dad did. So I know what it looks like. I know how people who are caregivers try to aid. But it's such a devastating, cruel illness, and they're earning, I think, the money is up to $1 million for the people walking tomorrow. It's, you know, you can walk or you can roll or you can just stay there and talk to other people coping with this condition. But it's all at the Bandshell at 72nd and 5th, and people can walk or just gather. And there's a rolling start from 8:30 till 1 o'clock.
Now, the walk is just more than just a physical event. It's more than just going out there and walk. It's also about the education and connection. What are the highlights that you're sort of looking forward to this Saturday?
Well, there's booths and other people coping. It's always great to share. This has been going on for 30 years, and 100% of the research goes to the Michael J. Fox Foundation. Parkinson's has really only had the same drug since, I think, the 1940s. Before that, people just coped and got stiffer and stiffer. No one quite knew how to handle it or what it was. But it's carbidopa levodopa, and it's pretty much the same drug, even though sometimes it's in a patch, sometimes in pills, sometimes in slow release. But they haven't come up with anything much different. So it's great to share with other people what they've tried. The new talk is something with stem cell research. I want to see what I can learn about that tomorrow. And just to see other people, how they're coping, is always a great thing, no matter what it is that you're coping with in life.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing I connect to it is my mom passed away of cancer many years ago. And when I used to live in the city, I used to go every year to do the Revlon Cancer Walk. And one thing I always got out of it was I was not alone. Because some situations, sometimes you could feel alone, that you're the only person that's going through this and watching your loved one suffer. But these types of walks that I felt, you know, like I said, I didn't feel alone. I felt other people who were dealing with this, and it was great just sort of be with them.
Well, and there's also tips. Like, I learned at one of these walks that if you put your foot in front of someone who's, they call it frozen, when they're really just having trouble getting going, you put your foot in front and they have to step over your foot, it kind of releases something and they just get walking. And it's a little trick I've learned when my husband gets frozen. It looks like you're tripping someone when you put your foot in front, and that sort of releases something where they can walk. I want to take a moment now to say there are about 20 of us all with the Weber name walking tomorrow. And Van Morrow, who does T-shirts in our area, stepped up and volunteered to make us all for free our T-shirts for the walk tomorrow. So I want to give a shout out to him and his Bear Mountain T-shirt. He does so much for our community. And I know he's very busy, constantly making Bethel Woods t-shirts and Little League t-shirts, but he donated for the Parkinson's walk tomorrow, and I wanted to give a shout out to him. I also want to mention to people locally, if you think you know someone suffering from some sort of movement disorder, we do have a group locally that meets at Cornell Cooperative Extension. Our next meeting is May 14th. Sorry, and you can come in between 4 and 5:30 and just drop in and see who in the area is coping with this and what doctors they're using, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that's something else.
Are those meetings also available on Zoom, or are they just in person?
Currently, they are not, which is something I want to work on because, you know, Parkinson's, you have trouble being mobile. So it'd be nice to have them on Zoom.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Angie, for listeners who want to make a difference, and how can they support the cause, whether through the walk or volunteering or donating? How can they help?
Well, the walk is the Parkinson's Unity Walk. You can look it up online, and there's a donate button. And, you know, with anything, when people are donating, anything is helpful. And then you can call Cornell Cooperative Extension if you want to get involved locally and register to come to the meetings. Or I can always take people's queries. Sorry, someone's trying to get through to me, so I hope that's not lousing up our call.
No, that's great. Well, thank you so much, Angela, for being on the show and telling us about this and all the work that you're doing in the community. Don't forget to listen to Angie on Folk Plus Sundays at 2 p.m. on Radio Catskill. Thank you so much, Angela. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We'll take a break, and when we come back, the latest episode of Curtain Call, our new theater to podcast. This is Radio Catskill.
This week on Selected Shorts, fiction about letting go. Of what, you may ask? Oh, the weight of history, the all-consuming relationship, maybe even that old cardigan languishing under the bed. I'm Meg Wolitzer. Join me as we say goodbye to all that.
Sunday night at 7 on Radio Catskill.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we're celebrating 25 years of democracy in South Africa by focusing on the musicians who stayed during apartheid.
Far more people did not leave than left. And there is a whole undiscovered, unknown legacy.
That's next time on Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride. Join me for Jazz Night in America, Sunday at 8, here on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Patricio Robayo. Curtain Call with Tom Candela is our new Radio Catskill podcast devoted to theater. And Tom is here with a preview of a new episode, which drops today. Good morning, Tom. Whoa, let me get your microphone up there. There
good morning. Okay, yeah, I can hear myself now. Good morning, Patricio. Appreciate you having me on today.
Yes, yes. So you have a new episode out there with, you sat down with performer Patrick Bringley. How do you spell that?
Patrick Bringley. Yes. This is a very, very interesting show. Patrick, was going to be some years back. He was, working for the New Yorker magazine. And, he was very much involved in that rat race of, you know, on a day-to-day basis there. His brother, his older brother, Tom, at some point became ill, and eventually he lost him to cancer. And in that process, Patrick started to sort of re-examine his life and wanted to move away from this, the craziness of a daily New York City type lifestyle, and was trying to look for stillness and calm and quiet. And this led him to quit his job at the New Yorker and take a job as a security guard at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And through that process, he found that stillness and he found that quietness, and he also found a way to solace for his soul and a way to come to terms with the loss of his brother, as well as being around all this beautiful art that really truly inspired him and engaged him. And so our conversation is really, really powerful and very enlightening, I found. And he's a great guy. So he takes this experience that he had and he turns that into a memoir. He writes a book and it becomes a New York Times bestseller. And he gets other accolades from book stores and from book clubs and became quite well known. And then at some point he decides he's going to make it into a show. And he turns his book, his memoirs, into a 80-minute off-Broadway show. I had the pleasure of going to see him perform the show. It was wonderful. Now, he's not an actor, but he did an exceptional job performing his work. And so that's basically what our conversation is about today. It's really wonderful. And so I hope people get to go and listen. And we're going to hear a quick excerpt of it right now, I assume.
Yep, he's Curtin Call.
So you're working for the New Yorker, and at some point you decide to leave that job. So what brought you from there to deciding I'm going to stop this job and I'm going to go work at the Met?
Yeah. I was working at the events department in the New Yorker, putting on things like the New Yorker Festival. And in many ways, it was an exciting job and an engaging job. But in other ways, it was an office job, and mostly I was answering emails and that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, my brother, Tom, got sick. He got what's called a soft tissue sarcoma. And all of a sudden, I was spending less time in this sort of skyscraper in Midtown Manhattan and more time in Tom's apartment in Queens and a bunch of quiet little rooms at Beth Israel Hospital. And the contrast between what felt like a very glitzy and glamorous sort of Midtown skyscraper job versus these rooms where something very quiet and profound and elemental and basic was happening was really stark. And when Tom died, I kind of wanted to stand still and think my thoughts and do something that felt honest and nourishing and straightforward. And that motivated me to take this job where I could kind of stand still professionally inside the Met.
And at some point, you get this idea to write a book about your experience. When did that first come to you?
Yeah, I always was scribbling just because I'm a person who scribbles in notebooks, but I didn't have any conception that I was going to be writing a book, much less a memoir. I just thought, I don't know, I would try to write a review of an exhibition from a guard's vantage point or something like that. And I was just sort of experimenting. Then, I don't know, toward the end of my time there, I got the idea to write a book, but my first idea was to write, I was calling it in my mind, A Guard's Guide to the Met.
Okay.
And I thought, you know, a guidebook from a guard's vantage point. And I sort of worked away, hacked away at that for, I don't know, months. And eventually, really toward the tail end of my being there, it occurred to me, the book that hasn't really been written about art is something that's very subjective, very much from a first-person perspective about what it's like to be amidst this stuff. And what draws us to this stuff in the first place, and what personal sort of solace and meaning I've derived from this stuff. I thought, well, what if I write a book that has no art historical terminology? What if I really honor that by just kind of writing about that stuff? Mm-hmm. And that set me on this path of writing a memoir, and I really had to teach myself how to do that because I really had no idea, and just by degrees, eventually helped by my agent and my editor as well, I sort of learned, thought about how to structure this thing and that it would have to involve my brother as well and sort of leap in time a few times and all of that. And it was not easy, but I did it.
So how did you go from I don't know how to write to writing this beautiful book?
I think what it took for me to be able to write a book was years, literally years, and composed of many, many empty hours of just thinking my thoughts and figuring out what it is that I think and what it is that I feel when I'm standing in front of a picture or when I'm thinking about something that's happened to me. And as a guard, you have the time and the space to do that. I allowed myself to not just try to write in a certain New Yorker, you know, approved voice, but to write in all kinds of ways, in all different directions, until I found a tone and also a viewpoint that felt like right.
Watching your performance, the way you hold yourself, the way you speak on stage, there was no pretense. It was a very quiet, heartfelt, subtle, quite remarkable for a person who hasn't trained as an actor to be able to do that.
My director, Dominic, is just so unbelievably skilled and experienced. And interestingly, so much of his acting coaching was about me being more myself. You know, don't put on a cadence, rather talk the way you talk and have a bit of jaggedness in it, because that's how people speak and they're thinking the thoughts in the moment and they're a little bit surprised by that. And
who brought the idea up as let's put on a show?
So I was giving more and more talks, mostly at museums. And I just realized that I really liked doing that. And I realized that I wasn't nervous. I enjoyed it more than I was terrified. And I had met in Charleston this guy named Dominic Drumgoole, a Brit, who ran the Globe Theater in London for 10 years and has directed hundreds of plays. So I pitched it to him. And he said, well, that's very interesting. Send me some pages. So I sent him some pages and he said, let's do it. And we've had just a sort of wonderful collaboration.
You took a full book, your memoir, and had to whittle that down to 80 minutes. What was the challenge in doing that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, what I did is I flipped through my book and I sort of found things that seemed essential. And then a lot of it ended up not coming from my book, because a good amount of it is things that I was doing in my talks, even things that I was doing on tour when I give private tours at the Met. And then some of it I just straight up wrote for the theater. I just sort of hacked away at my script until it felt balanced in a way and sort of felt right. I think at one point Dominic asked me, he's like, well, what did you use sort of as a model? And the reality is I didn't use anything for a model, like nothing at all. I just kind of kept working at it until it felt like the different elements were there and they were threaded through.
Yeah.
And the middle kind of rhymed with the beginning and rhymed with the end. And it all kind of, in the way that a sonnet or something kind of just feels balanced, it just kind of felt balanced.
It was an 80-minute show, but I left wanting more. Again, a very subtle performance. You don't overdo it. You don't put on, you know, big fake accents or try to do too much. You were able to convey other people in your life that touched your life while you were there, and you brought their stories to life as well. Did Dominic guide you through that? Was that something that you worked on together?
Yes, yes, for sure. Yes, he would have all sorts of little ideas about how to sort of differentiate and make it read to the audience. And that's one invaluable thing that he brings, is just an old hand at theater and knowing what will come across to the audience and just do everything sort of respectfully. I mean, that's one thing that Dominic also says, that, you know, he said our audience is remarkably quiet and attentive. He said that when you have these moments of stillness, everyone is just holding. There's no rustling or anything. And he says it's so impressive. And he credits it to, he said, well, you, Patrick, have this very sort of respectful manner toward them. And they sort of a kind of a politeness, a kind of a kindness, and they're paying you back. And I said, well, thank you. That's a tremendous compliment. And I do try to remember that when I take the stage. If I'm pretending to be another guard or something, have an integrity to it, have a respectfulness about it, and it won't come off as sort of crass or cheap.
Well, Tom, that's an amazing conversation, just that bit. It's amazing that he's able to take his grief and turning it to something positive.
Absolutely, absolutely. And he did it through with art as well. I mean, the beauty of art. So that's only a small piece, as you notice, of our 1 hour plus conversation. If you're interested in hearing the whole podcast, we go to wjffradio.org and look for our Programming tab. Click on that, and then you'll see podcast, and you can cursor down or scroll down to the Curtain Call podcast. And as far as the show, it is playing at the DR2 Theater. That's at 103 East 15th Street in New York. It's right by Union Square. You can purchase tickets at allthebeautyintheworldplay.com. And also you can get his book, Patrick's book, on Amazon or any of the other big booksellers like Barnes & Noble. It's truly a great read, and the show is really, really powerful and enjoyable. I recommend everybody going out there and taking a look and seeing the show.
We were talking to Tom Condella about his new episode on his new podcast, Curtain Call, that's out now today. Well, thank you so much, Tom, for joining us. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, Global Dance Fusion, a workshop to help harness your inner goddess.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, novelist Tori Peters, author of Detransition Baby, a book about the emotional, messy, and vulnerable corners of womanhood, told through the stories of cisgender and transgender women. She'll talk about her new book, a collection of four novellas called Stag Dance. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
This Week in This American Life, Mario's fiancé, Mikael, has a lot of tattoos.
Ah, bueno.
Mario likes to make fun of them.
Tiene un Mickey Mouse, pero fumando.
Like the one he has of Mickey Mouse, smoking a blunt. And then somebody sends her a video, and she recognizes Mikael by one of his tattoos. And he's in a prison in El Salvador. That's This Week.
This American Life, Saturday night at 6 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Patricio Robayo. Our next guest invites women around the world to move, not just their bodies, but their spirits. Nandini Austin is the visionary behind Global Dance Fusion, a dynamic blend of ancient wisdom, multicultural movement, and modern wellness. She calls herself a philosopher's educator. I gotta see if I said that right. I don't think I did. Through her temple goddess Global Dance Fusion and workshop, she's helping women harness their inner goddess, reclaiming the feminine power through movement, healing, and joy. Welcome to the program, Nadidi.
Hi, how are you, Patricia?
Doing good. Nice to speak to you again.
Yes, likewise. It's a gorgeous day.
Yes, definitely a beautiful day. So can you tell us a bit more about the movement or the inspiration that sort of led to the creation of the Global Dance Fusion?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's funny, Patricia. It was sort of a culmination of things. At the time, I was trying to sort of shed some baby weight, and I ended up buying this Fitbit. I don't know if you know those watches, because I really wanted to sort of like up my health regime. And I noticed that nothing I was doing, I was bike riding, I was running, jogging, nothing was really like burning the calories. And I was thinking, oh, what am I doing wrong here? And so funny enough, I ended up speaking to one of my good friends who said, why don't you just go back to dancing? You love dancing. We always used to dance together in the city. And she said, just dance like nobody's watching. And so I did. I basically just put on, you know, whatever music at home, because I liked a variety of music. And I started dancing, and I really noticed that, hold on a minute, this is really moving, you know, the needle. And I was actually burning some calories and feeling good about myself. And, you know, when I was dancing around at home, I started thinking, if I'm doing this, then other women might be doing this, you know, standing in front of the mirror and like singing and dancing around the house. So it was really that kind of movement. And then it was February. It was so cold up here, and I was isolated living up here in the Hudson Valley. And so I started dancing outside and doing something called snow aerobics. And then I thought, I'm going to just go to a dance class. I have to go to a dance class. And at my house, I had been sort of thinking about, what about if I start teaching dance? Because, you know, I really always, it was a passion of mine. And so I used to dance as a kid on stages in London, and I danced all different kinds of dances. I've never did one kind of dance. I kind of did a little bit of Indian, a little Bollywood, a little bit of disco, a little bit of aerobics. And I started doing this dance class to myself at home. And then one day when I went to this class in Rosendale in the library, sorry, this is quite a long story, the teacher didn't show up. And I was really disappointed, because I was like, I'd got my kids looked after. I went all the way to Rosendale to do this class. And this voice, Patricia, just came up saying, I can lead the class. And I literally stepped forward, had my speaker in my bag, and started teaching a class to a bunch of strangers. Yeah, it was I don't know. I think it was my kismet. Some voice said, stand up and do it. You've been dancing around for months now in your house, thinking about dance and Ayurveda, how to combine your passions. This is your moment. Just do it. And honestly, it was probably one of the most nerve-wracking times, but I just stood up and did it. And guess what? The women loved it. They were like, where can I do this? We love this so much. We want to come. And obviously, I didn't even have a studio at the time. So I called my girlfriend who was working, and she had a space in Stone Ridge at a gym there. And that's really how I started. I started teaching at the gym and just really showing women that there were, you know, dance can be such a beautiful way to celebrate our unique mm-hmm. selves. And it became a very natural thing. It was just almost dance improv. And then I started adding mantras and breath work and all sorts of things. So that's really how it started in a nutshell.
Right. Wow. That's amazing that you had that initiative and took it and look where it led you now. So let's talk about this Temple Goddess Global Dance Fusion and workshop that's coming up. What can folks expect when to experience from the movement when they arrive?
Well, sure. I mean, there's so many things that they can expect. I mean, because it's a 2-day intensive program, there's going to be a little bit of Ayurveda, which is the science of life and longevity. And we're going to be talking a little bit about dance as ritual and dance as a way to sort of get out of your overthinking mind and move into your body. But, you know, I like bringing it in a really fun way because I think wellness should be fun. So the retreat is all geared around fun, and it's set at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, which I don't know, have you been there before, Patricia? Have you been there?
No, I have not.
Oh, it's a stunning, stunning campus. I mean, it's been going for many years, and it's a sacred space for not just women, you know, all men, women to come and really sort of escape the hustle and bustle of their daily lives and be immersed in nature because they've got beautiful ground. So, you know, they can, any participant coming, first of all, is going to be wowed by that beautiful experience up there. And then, you know, we're going to start with fun because I'm all about fun, by the way, because dancing is fun. Dance is joyous. And I think that, you know, health and looking after our body should be a celebration. It should be a joy. It shouldn't be this chore or just another thing to add to the list of things to do. So, you know, when you arrive, you're going to get a beautiful mocktail. My husband runs the cocktail architect, and we make these beautiful mocktails. So we'll be serving a couple of those. We'll be connecting with other women. We'll be doing some really fun movement and dance. And I'm taking them on a global dance journey, I like to say. So we're not going to be doing just one type of dance because, listen, I just can't be one thing. I'm many things. I think as women, we are so many things, right? We've got a lot going on up here, Patricia. So we're going to be doing some Bollywood disco because I grew up, you know, from an Indian background. So Bollywood was always in the background. And then we're going to be doing some African Sega dance because I'm from the island of Mauritius and my parents are from there. And so, you know, bringing different styles of dance is what is my passion, right? Exposing people to new dance styles, to new movement, to new music. We're also going to be doing one of my favorites, belly dance, because belly dance, my sister in London, Ansu, she's a belly dancer. And thanks to her, you know, she got me into it as well. And belly dance is just a great way for us women to express ourselves. It's great for our abdominals. So we're going to be doing a little bit of belly dance. You don't have to be a great dancer, by the way, so I don't want to intimidate anybody. This is a really fun, it's dance as joy. You're not coming away going to be the best dancer in the world. It's not about that. It's a no-judgment class and experience. And then we're going to be doing some goddess ritual because it's called Temple Goddess, right? Yeah. So what I mean by that is, like, how is women today in this crazy world that we're living in, which is like sometimes be a bit heavy. I think you might agree, Patricia.
Yeah.
How can we, what tools can we pull out to help us really celebrate ourselves and actually help ourselves really view our bodies as a, you know, this vessel that it really is. It's a sacred vessel. And, you know, we have so many jobs and we, you know, as women, we're like caretakers and we've got to look after our husbands and our kids and our partners and our parents. But, you know, women don't have a lot of time to give back to themselves.
Nadine, I don't want to interrupt you here, but we only have like 20 seconds left. Where can folks sign up or join the movement?
Sure. Well, it's at the Omega Institute. If they come to my website, which is nandiniaustin.com, they can also visit me on Instagram, which is at Nandini Austin. And they could also visit the Omega Institute, the website there. So there's the three places I'd love to.